social work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity so people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. I'm Jo.
And I'm Jerry, and welcome to this podcast, which is 3B in series 2 of Helpful Social Work. Our podcast is on iTunes and also at www.helpfulsocialwork.com. And you can find most of series 1 there, and also the latest episodes of series 2. A few weeks ago, we posted a podcast on responsibilities and resources in interagency work. And this podcast is the second one for June, and it's our reflective conversation.
Okay. And Jerry, we've chosen to talk about specialisms. And I've got to say, I think you're trying to get me into trouble here.
No, this is my fault. I've just been involved in putting together a capability statement for social work with older people, which is Baswell-led project and sponsored by the Department of Health, working with social workers and older people and carers and various people across social care sector to identify what social workers need to be able to do when working with older people particularly. And before people kind of panic and say, we've already got the PCF, we've already got the knowledge and skills statements, we've already got this, that and the other, why do we need another one? I thought it'd be helpful to actually have a conversation about why we might need, obviously I think we do need some specialisms clarified, because I wouldn't be doing the work if I didn't think it was a useful thing to do. But I do recognise that there's confusion, isn't there? And there's difficulty in social work from the number of standards and frameworks and things that we've got going on. So I think it's an important topic to talk about.
And I think the thing is, Jerry, that it's about what we did in our last podcast, actually. It's about whether things are barriers or enablers, because our profession, the social work profession, and we've talked about this in the past, it's an emerging profession in terms of structure, standards, and that idea of claiming an identity, particularly in this country, where we're really got to know what we stand for as a group. And what we don't want to do is break ourselves into so many splinters that each of those splinters cause conflict. Now, you'd think that logically the medical profession and physiotherapy and all sorts of other professions have probably managed to have both specialisms and to have an overarching identity. And what I worry about is whether all of this activity is contributing to both the aim of us having a strong, resilient social work profession, where every single part of our profession, whether you be in mental health, whether you be working with adults, whether you be working with children and families, no matter how you're contributing, that you recognize each other as part of the same body. And when all of these different specialisms become part of the problem rather than part of the contribution to that. Does that make sense?
It really does. So there's two kind of particular outcomes that we're looking for, aren't there? There's a strong, helpful, quality, resilient profession.
Yes.
That everyone benefits from within the profession, and that they're then able to be, helpful to others.
And that they're proud to be a part of.
Yeah. And then there's also responding to the specific considerations around work with particular groups. I've always worked in adult services, particularly worked with older people. I wouldn't have the capabilities to go and do a child protection assessment. I could develop those from my basis of being a social worker. However, I do think that there are some particular considerations, and that evolved as we were drafting the statement. We started off thinking about potentially additional capabilities. In adults, you already have the professional capabilities framework, as all social workers do, and we do have a specific knowledge and skills statement as well for social work with adults. That didn't have the detail of what the research says is needed for older people. So if you take a kind of evidence-informed approach to working with a particular within a particular area, bearing in mind that all of these groups are really diverse. So I'm going to talk about older people as if they were a group, but there's massive variety and diversity.
Yeah, absolutely.
But within the research, there are themes about particular considerations around working with older people because of the life course, because of the impact of disadvantage across a life course, because of multiple complexities that can arise, because of age discrimination as a particular issue. And so I think the research points to there being particular things that you need to consider. And we started off thinking about additional capabilities and then actually found that they're not really additional. You know, they are the same sorts of things that all social workers do. So we ended up then thinking about more specific and detailed capabilities. Mm. So the way that I tend to think of this is that you have the professional capabilities framework as your foundation. And there may be particular roles that the government is interested in that they might set knowledge and skill statements for, or there may be particular statutory roles or areas of particular consideration around public protection where you'd have a regulated role like approved mental health practitioner, for example. But then you also, as you become more expert, as you develop experience and expertise working with a particular group, with particular considerations, you will develop more specific detailed capabilities. So, you know, if you're communicating with older people, all social workers have a capability around communicating well. However, if you're working with older people, there are some specific kind of detailed things you need to think about around the impact of stroke, dementia, or sensory loss, dual sensory loss in older age, those kind of things. So I do hold the view that additional information about capabilities is helpful, and I think it's okay to write those up and say, you know, think about these things.
So this has been a very compelling what would I say, Jerry, sales pitch here, but
yeah.
No, I'm only
please counter
you,
me no do counter
yeah
me.
Yeah
but you know it's been really difficult thinking this stuff through.
Yeah, it is.
It's, and hearing it's really, people's views on this. And,
and it's really complex. And I think that what you were talking about was hopefully, from the sound of it, a kind of evolving collaboration with a group of involved practitioners thinking about their practice from the baseline of the professional capabilities framework. And I think when you experience something like that, of course you see it as really helpful and interesting, and something that's going to be empowering. But there is another way that it can be experienced, and this is the problem that Children and Social Workers Act has been enacted. Of course, we have the knowledge and skills statement, and we're now going to go through an accreditation process. And for quite a lot of practitioners who have not had a chance for many reasons, and sometimes through their own lack of active involvement. Okay, so I'm not saying that it's like a victim thing, but I'm just saying for some people, this feels very imposed upon. It feels like there was no collaboration or consultation, that it is something that is being done unto them. And that's despite the fact that obviously there was consultation papers and there was a chance to talk about it and lots of people did do feedback. But if you're out there working in your job day to day, sometimes instead of seeing it the way you've talked about it, which is, I happen to agree, I think as we get more experienced, as we get more expert in a particular area, we tend to almost self-specialise. And I know for me, like when I worked with a group of social workers who worked with adolescents, they identified themselves that that was their specialism. And they would often say, oh, I don't do babies, me. Where, you know, so there was that self-identification. But it's about how you understand the requirements mm-hmm. of assessment and accreditation and specialism, and how you respond to them as something that is helpful to you, or whether you feel that it is something that is saying that what you are doing now is either not good enough or wrong.
Mm.
or that the knowledge you have is inadequate. And we know from the research about the knowledge and skills, when it was implemented, it's been trialled in a number of authorities, and it was highlighted that actually older social workers...
This is the accreditation assessment.
Accreditation kind of model, assessment,
yeah.
That's right. That older social workers and social workers who came from other countries often struggled to actually meet accreditation.
Mm. And so there's definitely an equality issue, isn't there?
And there's been a feeling from some people, not from everybody, but there's been a feeling from some people that there's a devaluing rather than a value added. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really helpful distinction to make between how people perceive this, whether they see it as something that adds recognition, value, support to their role, or whether they see it as something that actually is punitive or undermining or devaluing. And, you know, to be completely honest, we consulted widely on the capability statement for social work with older people, and some of the views were, please don't do another framework, it's not helpful. And I really do take that very seriously, because I think that it's very easy for any kind of guidance that's produced with good intention to have a negative effect. If it's presented in the wrong way, if people receive that message in a way that's not helpful to them. So one of the things that we've tried to be really clear about, it's not a checklist, it's not a set of things that you have to tick off. Its aim is to acknowledge and recognise that in a particular area of social work, in this case social work with older people, there are particular things to think about which come from the evidence, come from research, from practice experience, and from older people, older carers themselves, really crucially, that they would, you know, that a need to be considered, and that as you develop your expertise, then these are the things to look at developing. And I think it would be a very different experience if we were producing something that was right now going to be tested on, going to be assessed again.
The bottom line, though, for me, though, and you've touched on it, it's actually almost not about the tool. It's about the use of it or the implementation of it. And this is where we come unstuck so often, don't we? Because actually, of course, it is reasonable and helpful to be able to articulate the particular skills and areas of focus when you're trying to do your best with a group of people. I would want to know, if I moved now into mental health, I would really want to know what good looked like to someone who wanted me to be helpful with them around their mental well-being, around their health. And having a framework around that would be really great. So I can see that as helpful. What happens is the implementation. You don't know how it will be used. And the consequences of not meeting any of that have to be thought of as well. Yeah. And I think that this is the problem. It is the unintended consequences.
You keep banging the table.
I'm banging the table. I'm really sorry. We can take out my bangs or leave them in.
That's right. We might leave them in because they're really good at emphasizing.
Yeah, Jerry, you know something. I am really serious about this.
I think that's really interesting, actually, because, yeah, if you produce what is hopefully, let's hypothesize that this is helpful information about what good work with older people looks like. Then if you produce that, you kind of hope it will be used and to some extent embedded.
Yes, absolutely. Or why do it?
Yeah. And you're right. The way that that's done is really, really tricky, isn't it? And thinking about how that can be done in a positive way that values people, and not in a punitive, blaming, this isn't good enough. And this is a perennial problem with development of practice, isn't it? That as practice develops, as we have better understanding and better evidence, and we say, okay, well, we need to be trying to move this direction, the message that can be heard is, this wasn't good enough before.
Yeah.
What we were doing before wasn't valuable. And I think that's a really important, you need to recognise that impact on people is really important, but also to be really clear that the direction you're moving in is a worthwhile one, and by that I mean it I would go back to the touchstones of it being evidence informed, likely to have positive impact on the lives of people that you're trying to help. And I think where standards or guidance or frameworks fall down, particularly, is where people can't clearly see that. The ideal is to have something that's likely to be effective and that's helpfully put together and that is embedded in a positive and inspiring way.
And I think if we go right back to those touchstones, and in particular the touchstone of benefits to the people we are serving, the things that you have identified should be things that are highly helpful and beneficial to them. Therefore, it is right that the people working in the field strive to obtain the skills and knowledge which will allow them to carry out those highly beneficial things, no question at all. And it is also right that as knowledge of ourselves, as different methods and different ways of working, as developments in the field of medicine or neuroscience or child development or dementia, as any of those things are happening, that we as a profession are responding to that and adapting our working style, our approach and our knowledge to fit that, it is right that we continue to change and develop throughout our careers. And that we need to be doing that. I think all of that is absolutely fundamental to good, healthy social work practice. It's about opportunity, support, time, space, and how we measure the outcomes of any of these frameworks and how long we let them stay for. How are they being married together? It's all those kind of questions to me.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's expecting the right things, but then offering the commensurate support and opportunities to achieve them. And yep. Making this all about valuing people and people owning, social work as a profession, owning its aspirations and its expectations and its excellence, rather than feeling that things are kind of done to it.
Yeah.
And I think we do need the coherence and the clarity about those expectations. I think the things that are the bedrock of our standards are the generic things. I think the professional capabilities framework is a little complex, but it is helpful to have that single framework and to have the single code of ethics. And so I think the things that we add on to the professional capabilities framework, the primary things will be things that the profession develops with service users as being really helpful for, achieving good lives for those people, and that those will be things that marry absolutely to the professional capabilities framework, but will be more specific probably around that area of work. I think we'll continue to have things imposed on us around particular statutory roles or particular roles that there is a public interest in. Aside from the interest of our customers, if you like. And our job is to, as a profession, I think, is to make the fit between who we are and what we're trying to achieve and those particular roles, so that those people in those roles feel part of the profession, absolutely. And where there is a mismatch, actually, where there is a poor fit, that we highlight that, because that's going to cause stress for people. From what we've talked about, actually, I think the thing that I'm going to go away with is this really strong idea that how we do it is so crucial. Whatever great thing it might be around strengthening an area of social work, if it's not done in the right way, it will actually have a real counter effect. So that's the other role of the profession, isn't it? To make these things work well, to help them be embedded in ways that are useful, or to challenge them and push them if actually they're not going to be helpful.
And I think I'm going to go away with thinking about how each of us can continue to actively be involved in contributing to this development, and so how we can take advantage of the opportunities that are offered to us to consult, to be involved, to influence.
And I really hope that all social workers will feel valued. Of course it's an evolving field of work.
Yeah.
But the things that are going on right now are good things. I think we're just about out of time, aren't we?
We could probably say that one. We might have to come back.
We probably could. It's really, but see, we have more common ground often when we talk about that. Exactly. For me, it is really the concern about implementation.
Yeah, and keeping that one profession.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And definitely strengthening social work identity. That's the overarching social work identity, so that we don't splinter ourselves off into they're better than, they're lesser than, they're more special, they're that kind of stuff. You don't want that.
Okay. Yep. Well, it's been great talking to you. Thank you very much.
Righty-o.
Have a good day.